San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, Sunday, October 11, 2020. Today's lesson is Pioneers of New Thought with Reverend Dr. Constance Cook Core. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome to the San Diego Center for Spiritual Living. As I do every Sunday, I want to anchor us in this infinite truth, where we know that there is only one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence which flows through all creation. That one power is God, the living spirit almighty, one indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause in which we live and move and have our being. And so today we recognize that again together as I say to you, Namaste. Now, Namaste is a Sanskrit greeting, and it basically means the divine in me recognizes and acknowledges the divine in you. And this is how we recognize the oneness, the wholeness of all of life. People, places, and things, all of life. So we're continuing our October theme, which is New Thought, Ancient Wisdom. New Thought, Ancient Wisdom. And as I mentioned last week, those words can sort of seem to contradict each other. How can something be new and ancient simultaneously? Well, this month we're rediscovering and reawakening the wisdom of the ages with a new perspective on life. This month we're rediscovering and reawakening the wisdom of the ages. And together we're exploring the possibilities of how you and I can apply this ancient sacred knowledge in our daily lives. Ancient sacred knowledge. When we apply it in our daily lives, that's practical spirituality. And that shows up in the New Thought movement, practical spirituality. And I want to remind you that there were two books that I mentioned last week. Sherry Evans is the author of The Roads to Truth, In Search of New Thought's Roots. And Charles S. Braden is the author of Spirits in Rebellion, The Rise and Development of New Thought. If you are interested at all in where this movement comes from, how it came to be, then these are excellent resources. And you can learn about the history of the New Thought philosophy. Last week I shared some history of the New Thought movement and how this center is part of a worldwide shift in consciousness that took place in America over 100 years ago. And yet it has its roots, it reaches back through antiquity since the beginning of recorded history. And if it reaches all the way back to the beginning of recorded history, we know that it reaches even further back. It is part of the very soul of our planet. If you missed last week's lesson, The Roots of New Thought, you can go to our website and you can listen to the podcast. That lesson, it's on our website, www.sandiegocsl.org. It traced the people and the organizations that were changing the course of human consciousness. New Thought reflects how a new way of thinking and having a personal relationship with a higher power paves the way for a more happy, healthy, and creative and abundant life. It's no secret that the early New Thought movement became a catalyst for positive thinking. I mean, everybody knows that. And it continues to awaken humanity to its spiritual magnificence. So this morning, and for the rest of this month of October, my intention is to bring your attention to the men and women who are considered the founders of this new way of thinking, and then to explore ancient wisdom and ancient spirituality. So we're continuing our lessons, our explorations in consciousness today with this lesson, The Pioneers of New Thought. Everybody ready for that? Yay! Yay! Okay, so when I refer to those considered the pioneers of the New Thought movement, I'm referring to the pathfinders throughout history who have taken a new approach to an old problem. Or they have an innovative perspective that changes the course of human consciousness. A pioneer is defined as one of the first people to do something important. One of the very first people to do something important that is later continued and improved upon by other people. A pioneer is one who opens up and explores an area that's often overlooked or ignored by others. One that goes on before to remove obstructions or to prepare the way for others to follow. Trailblazers. My father was a pioneer in the computer industry. He was building computers that would fit in the glove box of your car in the 1960s. And I helped sort the resistors and the capacitors so that he could solder them on to a single board and create the math that is the brain of the computer. Very simple. Now, he didn't go on to be famous. This was something he did in our living room against my mother's wishes. She didn't like all those electronics in the formal living room, but oh well. So there's another pioneer in computers who is also a pioneer in new thought. Remember last week I said that almost everybody knows about new thought, they just don't know that it's called new thought? Let me tell you about Steve Jobs. He was one of America's most innovative and true pioneers of new thought. He was an inventor, innovator, entrepreneur, and most notably, the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of what many consider to be the most successful company in the history of mankind, Apple Incorporated. His genius and his out-of-the-box thinking changed the way this planet communicates, calculates, recreates, and he made all of it readily accessible and fun to use, including the Mac computer. Anybody remember the original Macs, the little boxes? And when you clicked on it, it said, "Hello world." Steve Jobs is responsible for the iPhone, the iPod, and a host of other Apple products that many people take for granted as they conduct their business every day. So listen to his words carefully as he shares his new thought perspective about life. He says, "Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. Doesn't that sound like Emerson's self-reliance? I think it does. Steve continues, and most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. Have the courage to follow your heart and your intuition. Now that is thinking a new thought. Doesn't that sound just like the things that I say up here that all the other new thought teachers say? Well, yes. We call it new thought. Steve didn't. He called it being Steve. Steve's legacy and authentic passion to make this world a better place lives on in his tools and toys that he left behind for all of us to play with and to learn from. So this morning we're going to take a closer look at some of the others who changed the course of human history and contributed to the evolution of our spiritual consciousness here on this planet. We will explore the pioneers of the New Thought movement that had the courage to view life from a different perspective. We're going to ask ourselves if we are willing to change our old views about life and embrace a new thought. And we'll consider being a pioneer of new thought in our own lives. Do y'all remember the old TV show Wagon Train? And all the pioneers were in their little Conestoga wagons. Wagons ho! So, here we go. Wagons ho! Are you willing to join me in being a pioneer of new thought in your own life? Yes or yes? Yes. Excellent. So place your hand over your heart and affirm with me. Today, I am willing to think a new thought. I have the courage to let go of the old and embrace a new way of living. And so it is. So breathe. Breathe. Boy, you're courageous. You are so courageous. You know what one of the good things is about letting go of the old? It makes room for all the new. That's what it does. Albert Einstein was one of the world's greatest thinkers, and he had a new thought perspective. He had this to say, science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. So think about that for a moment. Science without religion is lame. Can't really move. Religion without science is blind. It can't see what's going on in the world. So we need that integration of religion and science. In Einstein's lifetime, there was a dichotomy of terms and the challenge of how to reconcile the relationship between science and religion. Does that sound familiar? Aren't we still doing that today? They appeared to oppose each other back then. And we still have hardcore adherents on either side that oppose it. And then there's the whole rest of the world that say, hey, you know, you can't separate these. It's an issue today for theologians and clergy and science society in general. But the good news is, the more we advance in science, the more we are proving what the mystics have always told us. 77 years before Einstein was born, another person came into the world that changed the way people viewed religion and introduced the scientific perspective that has been called the New Thought Movement. In fact, he's considered the father of the New Thought Movement. His name is Phineas Parkhurst Quimby. And Quimby was a true trailblazer. He began his career as a simple clockmaker in Belfast, Maine, where he spent most of his life. It has been said that Phineas Parkhurst Quimby was the first man since Jesus the Christ to discover and scientifically prove the power of physical healing that Jesus used. He performed instantaneous physical healings by understanding and making use of the universal principle of wisdom that he called science. He wrote an article in December 1859, and this is what he said about disease and illness. Quote, "The trouble is in the mind, for the body is only the house for the mind to dwell in. Therefore, if your mind has been deceived by some invisible enemy into a belief, you have put into it the form of a disease, with or without your knowledge." Now that sounds familiar too, doesn't it? From thought to form, from the invisible to the visible. And we know that this is true, and you can reverse the thought and reverse the disease. Quimby defines disease as, quote, "as something made by belief or forced upon us by our parents or public opinion." He says, "If you can face the error and argue it down, then you can cure the sick." Disease is nothing more than false reasoning. The cause of man's misery and trouble lies in our false reasoning. Quimby had two pet peeves, and when I was studying him, I saw those and I thought, isn't that funny? Isn't that funny? Dr. Quimby, in his Metaphysics and New Thought, his pet peeves were priests and doctors. And his reasoning was because both have such a strong hold on the minds of the people and tend to keep them under their power. He said once, "Take a man to a doctor with one disease, and he will come away with six." He also was very concerned about the priests, because when the people would go into the churches, the priests would be telling them how horrible they were, how awful they were, they were all going to go to hell unless they did ABC, and demeaning, destroying their sense of the divine. He healed more people by explaining to them that they were loved and that they were already whole than the churches saved. Quimby was known to cure a patient at a distance by writing a letter and healing his patients by absent mind treatments. Sound like magic? Not when you remember that there's only one. Quimby learned through his experiments that mind is not subject to the limitations of time or space. In other words, he aligned with the one mind, the one power, the one presence, the one infinite intelligence of God on behalf of his patient. Quimby is quoted as saying, "If I can show that man's happiness is in his belief and his misery is the effect of his belief, then I have done what never has been done before. Establish this, and man rises to a higher state of wisdom, not of this world, but of that world of science which sees that all human misery can be corrected by this one principle. Let me ask you again, does any of this sound familiar to you? Yeah. Change your thinking, change your life. Change your belief, change your experience. Not too long after Quimby's revelations of healing was the advent of women into the metaphysical world who were true pioneers of their day. In an article written by Laura Wilson of the Denver New Thought Examiner, she says, quote, "If there is one unifying fact about the New Thought movement of the early 20th century, it was considered the first feminist movement. At a time when women were fighting for their education, equality to vote, and equal status beside men, their voices were unequaled in the flourishing path of spirituality." Yeah. Yeah, so your women are fighting left and right to be recognized as something other than a second-class citizen. Women did not want to be chattel. Women wanted to be them. They wanted to be the divine expressing through themselves, as we all have the right to be. And in New Thought, they flourished. Even today, there are many more women in New Thought. There's an amazing number of women ministers and women practitioners in the New Thought clergy. And I say, great, wonderful. Our Declaration of Principles tells us anyone can be a revealer of truth who abides in closeness spiritually with that truth of the divine. So New Thought is the embodiment of all people are one, that we are all connected and all part of our Creator. How attractive would it be for anyone feeling oppressed, women and men alike, to see themselves on par with the Creator? To see themselves on par with the Creator. You don't get that in just any church. In fact, you don't get that in many churches. Most churches feel that there needs to be an intercessor, either a priest or Jesus the Christ. In New Thought, empowerment was no longer the exclusive providence of those who could afford it or who was entitled to it by gender. Empowerment was within. Now, in the latter part of the 19th century, women such as Emma Curtis Hopkins, Mary Baker Eddy, Melinda Kramer, Myrtle Fillmore, Emily Cady, and Nona L. Brooks founded the principles of science and religion that would go on to seed today's New Thought churches like Unity, Christian Science, and Divine Science. Ernest Holmes, who is our founder, was part of the Divine Science organization. He was an ordained minister in Divine Science. Now, the following are just a few examples of the courage that women embraced in the early days of the New Thought movement. So what did we say we were going to do today, huh? Did we say, I have the courage to let go of the old and embrace a new way of living? So here are some examples of women who expressed and embodied that courage. In 1898, Elizabeth Towne was a young single mother without education or business skills. What she did have was an idea to help other women like her by creating a magazine that published helpful stories about homemaking, parenting, personal health, and finances. Elizabeth began to read the works of Emma Curtis Hopkins about the art of self-healing, the law of attraction, and other New Thought ideals. And she began to incorporate this philosophy in her work. And with a $180 business loan from her father, the Nautilus magazine was born. I love that name, Nautilus. Think about the Nautilus shell and how it so exemplifies spiritual geometry. The magazine, the Nautilus magazine, attracted all of the major New Thought teachers and practitioners of the day. And it was being published for 55 years. So Elizabeth Towne, Nautilus magazine, New Thought. Another pillar of the feminine New Thought movement was Florence Scovel Shinn. Anybody heard of her? Yeah. She was an artist and a metaphysics teacher in New York in the early part of the 20th century. Florence had the ability to explain her success principles and how they worked in an entertaining and easy to read style. She is still easy to read. Her works are still easy to read. By sharing real life stories, Florence illustrated how positive attitudes and affirmations invariably succeed in making one a winner in life, able to control your life's conditions, and to release abundance through the knowledge of spiritual law. Good things to know, right? We still teach those things. Now here's an icon in the New Thought movement, Myrtle Fillmore. Along with her husband, Charles, they founded the Unity Church of Christianity. They both attended a series of lectures by Dr. E.B. Weeks. Dr. E.B. Weeks was a student of Emma Curtis Hopkins. They were so inspired by what they learned from E.B. Weeks that they started studying with Emma Curtis Hopkins. Through the New Thought teachings, Myrtle was able to heal herself of tuberculosis and plant the seed of truth that eventually became the Unity School of Christianity and the Association of Unity Churches. Her husband, Charles Fillmore, had injured his hip in an ice skating accident when he was a child, and it left him with a lifelong limp and other disabilities until he began practicing the same principles of mental healing that had cured his wife's tuberculosis. And over time, this is just miraculous, over time he was able to balance the length of his legs and walk without a limp. With his depth of understanding of biblical scripture, Charles wrote the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary. It was published in 1931, and it's used as a study guide for many churches and organizations. When our bookstore was open, we always had copies of it. Always. And it was handy to have because the bookstore and the church office were in the same general area. So when we were talking to people, we could go right over to the store bookshelf and pull it out and say, see here, this is what it says here. to help them better understand. History is filled with such luminaries as I have just mentioned. And there are scores of others that you may be familiar with, including Emmett Fox, Benjamin Franklin, Warren Felt Evans, Napoleon Hill, William James, James Allen, Jack and Cornelia Addington, Norman Vincent Peale, Ralph Waldo Trine, and Ralph Waldo Emerson, H.B. Jeffries, Catherine Ponder, Emanuel Swedenborg, Wayne Dyer, Joseph Murray, Thomas Troward, Meister Eckhart, Frederick Bales, Donald Curtis, Eric Butterworth, Sri Aurobindo, and Paramahansa Yogananda, just to name a few. There are many, many others. However, I only have so much time here to tell you about the pioneers in deep thought. You really do not want me to start reading aloud from Spirits in Rebellion, because it's a thick book with fine print, and we'd be here for days. I do recommend it, though. And when you hear those names, they are authors. Read what they have written. Read what they have written. Our own Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of the religious science movement and the author of the Science of Mind textbook, says that we should continually expect new revelations of old truth, which is exactly what the title New Thought, Ancient Wisdom is all about. So I'm going to read from the Science of Mind textbook. This is from page 439, and it's under the subtitle New Cloth and Old Garments, and it refers back to a biblical quote, Matthew 9, 16, and 17. But what Ernest says is, in saying that, quote, no man puts a piece of new cloth on an old garment, or new wine into old bottles, end quote, Jesus was teaching a lesson in religious development. We are continually living a new life, and when the old and the new do not fit nicely together, the old, being no longer able to contain the new, should be discarded. Continually, we must expect new revelations of old truths. We should never lose sight of the fact that the soul is on the pathway of an endless and ever-expanding experience, and that only by expansion can it evolve. There is no limit to the possibility inherent in all men. Let the timid soul put its complete trust in good and press on bravely. So we can't really take something that is completely old and include it with something brand new. One of the things I remember growing up was my brother wore jeans, and my mom bought the jeans from either Sears or JCPenney or something that had the extra reinforcement at the knees, which when you look at it, it looked like an iron-on patch in the knees up from the inside. And still, my brother would fall down and skin his knees and get little holes in his knees. And so my mom would then take a real iron-on patch and put it on over his knees. Now that was fine until the jeans were faded from washing and the patches were not. And I remember one time my dad said, "Why is that boy wearing patched jeans?" So you can see that my dad is looking at the outside. He's thinking, you know, I make enough money. Why is my son wearing all these patched clothes? And my mom is thinking, hey, I'm being frugal here. I don't want to have to buy him new jeans because he still fits those. And all of us, we grew quickly. So the fact that he could still fit his jeans meant that he hadn't had them that long. No lesson about pioneers of new thought would be complete without including Christian D. Larson. Who has heard of Christian D. Larson? One. Okay. So Christian was an amazing guy. He was a dear friend and mentor to Ernest Holmes. He wrote several books. One of his classics is The Pathway of Roses. When I was doing my doctoral thesis, that was one of the books I used for my research. He also wrote What Right Thinking Will Do and Your Forces and How to Use Them. He was a very close personal friend of the founder of our religious science movement, Dr. Ernest Holmes. Now, early in their career, Ernest and his brother Fenwick took a correspondence course with Larson, who later became the associate editor and frequent contributor of the newly published Science of Mind magazine. And he stayed with that magazine for decades. One of the many accomplishments that Christian Larson offered to the New Thought movement is the Optimist's Creed. He wrote the Optimist's Creed, and a shorter version is used the world over as a universal affirmation of positive thinking. But this is the original statement in his entirety that I'm going to read to you now. Promise yourself to be so strong that nothing can disturb your peace of mind. To talk health, happiness, and prosperity to every person you meet. To make all your friends feel there is something worthwhile in them. To look at the sunny side of everything and make your optimism come true. To think only the best. To work only for the best, and to expect only the best. To be just as enthusiastic about the success of others as you are about your own. To forget the mistakes of the past and press on to the greater achievements of the future. To wear a cheerful expression at all times and give a smile to every living creature you meet. To give so much time to improving yourself that you have no time to criticize others. To be too large for worry, too noble for anger, too strong for fear, and too happy to permit the presence of trouble. To think well of yourself and to proclaim this fact to the world, not in loud word, but in great deeds. To live in the faith that the whole world is on your side, so long as you are true to the best that is within you. That, I believe, is one of the best affirmations about life ever written. Ever. Now, if you'd like to know more about the people I've mentioned this morning, you can refer to those books, The Roads to Truth and Spirits in Rebellion. I believe they are available on Amazon. And we do have some in church storage. So thank you. Thank you for our Wagons Home exploration of these pioneers of new thought. Let them be your dear friends. Read their writings, because they actually do change our lives. Thank you for your time and your attention. Namaste.